Live event coverage on RadioSt.Pete.com from the St. Pete Yacht Club. It is the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon. We're starting a few minutes late because of the annual meeting that took place. And now let's go to the podium. Here is President Todd Jennings. Dennis Phillips is our speaker today.
Today's Tiger Timer is past president and board member Corey Adler. The rules for the Feng and Kloss question session on your tables. Please review the Q&A session. Please review the rules prior to the Q&A session. As a reminder, only members and young Tigers can ask questions. You have 45 seconds to frame your question, no exceptions. You may only ask a single question and no speeches, please. And wait for the microphone and then state your name clearly. Rating the Feng and Kloss questions today are several board members in the audience: Kelly Kirshner, Brian Battaglia, Barclay Harless, Harvey Landris, and Marilyn Miller. The 2017 Florida hurricane season was dominated by Hurricane Irma, which initially struck Key West as a Category 4 storm with winds of more than 130 miles per hour, resulting in power loss to millions of statewide residents, including my household for over 8 days, but who's counting? Irma was tied to more than 30 deaths and in excess of 335,000 claims for insured coverage. Citrus crops took a $761 million hit from the September storm, while the sugar industry suffered $383 million in losses and $203 million in losses to cattle ranchers. Our esteemed speaker today, who I don't think really needs an introduction, most of us probably follow him on Facebook, is noted for his expertise as a severe storm reporter, frequently filing his on-scene TV reports under dangerous conditions. He has an intense following of dedicated Facebook fans with over 200,000 followers. He graduated in 1985 from Penn State University, from its nationally ranked meteorology department. His first on-air position was in Salisbury, Maryland. He then worked at TV stations in Gainesville, Providence, and Los Angeles before arriving here in Tampa several years ago. So at this time, I'd like everybody to join me in giving a warm Tiger Bay welcome to today's speaker, Dennis Phillips.
Thank you very much. I was told this is a very strict time limit on many things, and I'm going to be getting time cues. And usually when my producer in my ear gives me a 45-second cue, I still go for another 2 minutes. So keep that in mind, whoever's giving me the time cues. I'll tell you, this was a year, I would say, unlike any year we've experienced in quite a while, but I've been here 24 years, actually. Believe it or not, I'm the last remaining person from our original hire. Back in 1994, all the TV stations locally changed their affiliation, and we were actually a Fox station, and we didn't have a news department. I was working in Los Angeles, and my boss in LA took the job as the news director here and said, do you want to come back to Florida? I had lived in Gainesville, and I really loved Gainesville. I loved Florida in general. And LA, you got a minute and a half to do the weather, and half of it was the smog forecast, so it was really boring. So I thought coming back to a place that has such incredible weather, including tropical weather, which was what I specialized in college, I thought would be a perfect fit. So I started in 1994, and as of right this minute, I'm the last remaining person standing of the original hires. I've been there 23 years. And we had a pretty quiet track record in terms of hurricanes and tropical storms for most of those times. Now, back in 2004, and this is the question I get from more than anything else in the world, when I go out in public, 99% of the time, the first thing I always hear is, what's up with those suspenders? It's true. And there is a story behind it, because back in 2004, when Hurricane Charley was coming this way, how many of y'all were here when Charley was on the way? Most of you. Well, that was our storm. I mean, I think a lot of folks remember 2 or 3 days before Charley was coming, that was the one that was going to do every bit the damage that Irma did and then some. It was a Cat 4 and forecast to go right to the mouth of Tampa Bay. Well, when I'm heading into work that day, I owned one pair of suspenders to my name. I happened to have them, and I happened to put them on. So I'm on the air 30, 40 straight hours, and after the storm missed us, the station did all this research. Who did you watch? Who did you like? Overwhelming response. I have no idea what the guy's name was, but he was wearing a pair of suspenders. It's just a true story. So my boss goes, that's your new shtick. And I said, I have one pair. He goes, eBay, go buy some more. So that's kind of how that started. But then for the last 12, 13 years thereafter, it's been pretty quiet. And all of a sudden, this year came around. And even before the beginning of the hurricane season, and we often hear about the long-range forecasts, because there'll be one in April, there'll be one in June, and then they'll update it in August. They're usually a waste of time. I think long-range hurricane forecast means nothing, because no matter how many storms develop, it can be 20 or 25 in the Atlantic, if none of them hit us, then our perception is it was a quiet year. I mean, that's just human nature. I mean, back in 92, the first named storm of the season, the first A storm, wasn't until the middle of August. It was a quiet year, but that first storm was Andrew. So probably folks in South Florida would argue if you told them it was a quiet hurricane season that year. So this year, the original prediction was between around 11 and 15 storms, which is actually, there's so many folks that get involved in the whole process now in the long range stuff, but most of them were between 9, 10, 11, 12, and normal is about 11. So it was expected to be an average year. And we started to see some things that we thought were going to make things a little bit different. We started to see a La Nina develop, which doesn't mean anything to most folks, but it usually means it's going to be an active hurricane season. When you have an El Nino, it typically means it's going to be less active. La Nina also usually means it's a warm winter and a dry winter, which is we're still under. So except for the fact that we're going to see a cold front and be in the 50s and 60s this weekend, it's still expected to be a pretty warm winter. But this storm, and the one thing that I was asked from so many folks, and actually what came in terms of the email when they asked me to come talk here, when Joe sent the email, what did we learn this year? Well, in terms of hurricane forecasting, at this point, it's probably too early to say that we've learned anything in terms of the actual science of it. And when I use the term science, my son's a first-year medical student in Tulane. I have six kids, and my oldest just started at Tulane. And when I went there this past year for the white coat induction, they said, the speaker said, you know, we practice medicine. That's why they say it. We practice because we're always learning. And I kind of thought that's a very accurate description for meteorology, too. And anybody who's ever seen the seven-day forecast knows that that's the case, which is another story entirely when people ask us about global warming, because the same models that predict what's going to happen in global warming are the same ones that we use for the seven-day forecast. And I say, you see how inaccurate they are 7 days? You think 7 years or 70 years? Then try again. So I think that's something that there might even be a question or two about. But regardless, in terms of hurricane season and this particular storm, I will tell you, this should have surprised no one. 2 weeks out before that storm was threatening Florida, I went on TV. The center of this had just come off of Africa, and my exact words on the air were, this is a storm we have to watch. Because every single model that we have, and granted, some are very good, some aren't as good, with Irma, and we can talk a little bit about that in a second, but everything was coming together that we knew this was going to be a threat to Florida. Doesn't mean it's going to hit us, means it can be a little bit east, a little bit west, but we at least knew there was the threat. So what I always tell people to do, when we give that threat, I usually go on one of our websites, one of the travel websites, and I'll book a hotel that I can cancel up to 24 hours beforehand, and I will book a hotel for the family, so I'm not waiting until 2 or 3 days out when a lot of people, how many people in this room tried to book a hotel reservation in Florida and couldn't do so with that storm? A few? Well, I know a lot of people I work with tried to, and they couldn't because it was completely sold out. My next door neighbors ended up going to Atlanta because that was the closest hotel they could find. And that was 2 days out. So what was unique about Irma, and this is something that is so hard to fathom, but the track of Irma always covered the state of Florida. It always did. We were always in the cone. But see, human nature isn't to look at the cone. It was the same thing with Charlie. Human nature is to look at where that line right in the middle is going. So how many of you guys over that period of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday were just watching that line move left and right and cursing the weatherman the entire time, saying how you don't know what you're talking about? And there is truth to that at times. But with Irma, we always knew it was a Florida storm. We just didn't know what side of Florida we were talking about. And that was the biggest thing. So what we learned in terms of forecasting, it's too early to tell in terms of how the actual science may be changing, what we're learning about intensification, because Maria and Irma both just blew up in a short period of time. It's called rapid intensification. It's when in a 24-hour stretch, it goes up 40 knots or more in terms of intensity, and it did a lot more than that. But what we learned is that people at home are no longer watching broadcast television to get the majority of their information. And that is a very sobering thing to learn when that is your paycheck every couple of weeks, broadcast TV. But that is the reality. We talked about Facebook and social media. So it took me about 5 years to get 70,000 Facebook followers, and I was second or third in the state in terms of overall likes. In a five-day stretch, I got 130,000 new followers, and 95% of them were from Pinellas and Hillsborough County. So people were actively trying to get the information, but they weren't doing it on television. They were watching on social media. How many folks would you say depended more on Facebook in terms of getting information from Hurricane Irma than local TV? Maybe a third? And that's probably, dare I say, the younger generation to an extent. I think that's probably fair to say. It's nice to know that some folks are still out there that watch. That's a plus. But the reality of it is streaming video, social media, broadband. In fact, you know, we're always getting our updates. I know you're not supposed to have electronics on, but I just actually got a little breaking thing that I really did want to mention. It was we just had a resignation. Anybody have any idea who just resigned? Yeah, it was a couple of minutes ago, Al Franken resigned. So these updates that we get have become the lifeline for our viewers. Now, the key to what we're learning in terms of forecasting hurricanes is how do we present that information to people? Let me tell you, when I get people, and I cannot tell you how many thousands of messages we got, the one that always frightens us the most is, should I evacuate my family? How many people evacuated? About half the room. Did you decide, how many people decided 24 hours out or less to leave? How many were last minute? Few. And was it because of the track movement? Was it because I think that's what made Irma so challenging, because all it took was a 60 or 70 mile track shift. The Hurricane Center says flat out, 3 days out, the margin of error is 300 miles. That's their average margin of error 3 days out, 300 miles. So that means 3 days out, this could have been east of the Bahamas or into Louisiana. I mean, that's how big of a margin of error it is. So when we know that everybody in this room and everyone in our area depends on that information, it makes it borderline impossible to tell people specifically, I live in Brandon and I live in a mobile home and I've got two big oak trees. Should I evacuate? And those were the kind of questions that we got constantly. So what I would encourage people to do, and I know that we were talking, we stream. The advantage of social media in this kind of a situation is it's at whenever you want to see it. You don't have to turn the news on at 5 or 6 or whenever you turn on the news. You can get that information 24/7, and it gives us the ability to actually be a little more lengthy in our discussion. I get 2.5-3 minutes to do the weather. I can do a Facebook Live for 2 hours, and I'll literally be answering people's questions as we do it. So it's a tremendous tool. It's a tremendous asset for folks at home to be able to get the information that they need. Because I will tell you, it's a funny story. Thursday night, Friday morning, my family had still not evacuated. And we have these giant trees in our house, but I really didn't think we were going to have structural damage. So the track, the Hurricane Center still had the track on the east coast of Florida, right? Well, the European model is pretty much the best model on earth, and it's the one that the Hurricane Center usually goes with when they're in a pinch. Well, it's 2 a.m. Friday morning, and I'm sitting there at my computer at home, and I have Facebook open, and I'm waiting for that new Euro run to come in. And sure enough, it did, and that track went from the east coast of Florida to the west coast of Florida. And that was 3 hours before the Hurricane Center was going to update their new advisory. So 20 seconds after that model update had come out, I get a message on Facebook from Paul Delgado over at 13. It's a buddy of mine. And his message just said, oh my God. That's all it was. Because we both saw that change. And we had a discussion, the two of us, is this something that we release to the public before the Hurricane Center actually changes their forecast? And we both decided that we should, because truthfully, the traffic was so horrific trying to get out of Florida. So if we tell people at 2 a.m., they had a three-hour window before the Hurricane Center changed their track, which we all know they did, and it gives some people a chance to get up on the road and go. And actually, that's what my family did as well. They just got up and started going, as did quite a few of my neighbors. Because usually the way it works is, in my neighborhood, if I board at my house, that's when the neighbors usually do. And what was even worse is when they saw me putting all my pictures and everything that I own in my car ready to go to work, that was a very sobering thing. And that's what I learned more than anything in the world. When I was going to work that Saturday morning, I mean, I get choked up thinking about it. Every picture that I own, every scrapbook, my computers, I had jammed in the back of my car, and I went into work. And I saw my neighbors looking at me. Because they are thinking, oh man, well, if he's doing it, we should do it too. And it wasn't even fear that I was seeing from a lot of the folks. They were sad because everything, their world, they really thought was about to be thrown into giant upheaval. So when I went into work that day, and it's probably because now I'm the old guy at work and I have no idea how the heck that happened, but we had some of our reporters out in the field, you know, and you've got the typical. One of them was out there worrying that her hat was being blown off during her live shot. And another one was talking about how she wanted to get her Starbucks because it was – this was out on air. And I know you see that sometimes on TV, but it really angered me because I was thinking to myself, if I'm at home and I'm worried that I'm about to lose my house or lose everything that I've spent my life building and some person's worried about getting their Starbucks, I would tune the station in a minute and I would never watch them again. And I went on the air and just reamed them out. And I got reamed out, of course, for doing that by my boss. But it just, to me, the tone was everything. And I think all the stations really kind of picked up on that as we went through that weekend. Because when I go to groups, and I probably do three a week since the hurricanes hit, and I always tell people, we're lucky in this market. To me, I have, of course, I'd rather you watch us. But we have great people and great stations in this market. Bay News 9 does a great job. I know every chief met in this town, and they all do a really, really nice job. So to me, it's just a matter of you pick your favorite, and you stick with the people that you trust. And I think that trust is really the key to everything. And when we get national media, and this is what I heard more than anything, people were tuning into our Facebook feeds and watching our local because the national media was scaring the hell out of everybody. CNN and the Weather Channel, and I have friends who – I just got a five-minute cue, so you know that means I'll be like seven or eight. I cannot tell you, and I have buddies of mine. Mike Seidel, who works for the Weather Channel, is my college roommate. I mean, I've known these people for a long time. But the Mets on TV, they're not really the ones to blame. The promotions departments and the people who want to hype it, saying, you know, death and destruction and a million are under the gun. You know, people see that at home, and especially if you have relatives up north, they're seeing that and they're calling you saying, "Get the heck out of there." I'm sure you guys got calls like that from family members because I know all my neighbors did, as did I. So what I think local did a really nice job doing after realizing this really could have been – I mean, how many times have we said this? We dodged a bullet with this one. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we had the Hurricane Center had a Category 4 hurricane pretty much right on top of us at one point. And here's something else. We never had sustained hurricane force winds in the Bay Area. We never did. What we had, weeks of no power, damage, we never had sustained hurricane winds. We had gusts of 80 to 90. Polk County had about 92 to 100, quick gusts, but sustained, it never happened. So imagine if this is the damage and the feedback that we get from something that was really barely even a hurricane. What would have happened if it was four or five times stronger, which is something else that a lot of folks have asked me about. And I said this on the air. It's not a meteorological formula. It's a building formula that I don't have any idea how they came up upon it. But a Category 5 hurricane does 500 times more damage than a Category 1 hurricane. Now, the winds are not 500 times stronger, but the amount of damage of a 5 is 500 times more than a 1. So when we had barely a 1 and we were talking about a 4, most of these beautiful old buildings and most of these trees, we would have been devastated unlike anything we have ever seen. And that doesn't even begin to talk about surge, which I think a lot of folks who were evacuated in flood zone A obviously had to deal with that as well. You know, surge is a tricky thing anyway. Charlie was forecast to have a 15-foot surge. It had a 3-foot surge when it actually hit Punta Gorda, 3 or 4. So there's always the expression, you hide from the wind, you run from the water. And so if you do live in an A, I think people are savvy enough to know when the storm is a real threat and when it's kind of borderline. And as Floridians, we go through this so many times. We've had a lot of near misses. But this was a storm. When I left to go to work with Charlie, I did not think my house was going to be there when I went back. I lived off of the water in Tarpon Springs. With this storm, I knew my house was going to be there. I just didn't know if it was going to have a tree on top of it. And that was the difference. So what I would just say in terms of information to the public now, some folks are on Twitter, some folks are on Instagram, Snapchat, you know, Facebook, whatnot. I can tell you from what I do for a living and how our information is sent out to the public, it is so much easier. I mean, we look at media now as so many different levels, whether it's social media, whether it's live streaming, or whether it's broadcast. The information is out there, and it's never been better. I mean, the problem maybe is sometimes there's even too much information because your Facebook feed is being loaded up by all these people that you have no idea who they are or what they're saying, but they're all saying you're all going to die. Because I was seeing it too. In fact, I watched the Weather Channel for about 2 minutes during the event, and after that 2 minutes, I tweeted, I just watched 2 minutes of the Weather Channel. I'm now having heart palpitations. And that's the only thing I tweeted. And their news director, their program director, actually, I know him, messaged me and asked me why I said that. And I said, because you guys are scaring everybody, and it doesn't need to be that way. Because here's the bottom line. We all know how bad it might be, right? I think everybody kind of had – we get it. After hearing it for at least a half a day or a day, that everybody could die and everybody could be destroyed and all this stuff, I think we get that part. So maybe, considering the fact the forecasts aren't always right 100% of the time, maybe let people know that the other side of the coin could also happen and we could be okay and try to help them through the event as opposed to scaring them through the event. And I believe that you develop loyalty that way. And that's what we at least tried to do. And I believe most of the other stations, the exception of one, which I'm not going to say, but I think all the other stations did a really nice job of the same thing because it's our community. It's our neighbors. It's our friends. If the national media wants to scare you, then my suggestion is go local because, honestly, we all were dealing with the same thing as everybody else was. So that's kind of a quick overview in terms of just what we learned in coverage. But if you have any specific questions about the tropics, hurricanes, cold front, the weekend forecast, I'm afraid.
Ann McMullen with Doyle Wealth Management. Thanks for being here and thanks for being here. So as one of those folks who did evacuate, two questions for you. At what point did the hurricane, was it no longer a hurricane before as it was coming up towards us? And the second one, because I'm riding the water as well, and we were waiting for that storm surge. And how has that impacted that storm surge hurricane?
Great question. A couple of answers to that. First of all, the Hurricane Center does not like to change their forecast once it gets within 12 to 18 hours of landfall. Their mindset is, at that point, it's too late for them to do anything about it anyway. We don't want people to all of a sudden – well, here's my reason. When it hit Naples as a 4, minimal 4, it was very clear that that was going to move inland and the threat was no longer from Tampa Bay westward. And I said that on television. And my words were, sometimes you have to throw the models out the window and look out the window, which is what was happening. That storm was clearly moving inland. The minute it moved inland, we had no longer had a surge threat. So in terms of a surge question, the minute a storm goes inland, it loses its push. Now, if a storm were to go over Cuba and then redevelop surge down the road, it could. But once it makes landfall, your surge in that immediate area is limited. What I thought was insane, and I'm sure you guys did too, is seeing all the water go out of Tampa Bay. I have never seen anything like that. And that just shows you how big of a storm this was, because that was happening when it was still 18 hours away. It was a huge storm. It was, if that storm had, and here, you want to know what our saving grace was? It's really easy. Cuba was our saving grace. And we said that a few days beforehand. Best case scenario for us, worst for them, is that this storm lingers around Cuba for about 12 hours. Because what happens is not only does it weaken it, it weakens its structure. So by doing that, it keeps it from getting stronger, even though there was all that warm water that everybody was talking about between Cuba and Florida. It never had a chance to use that warm water because its structure had been weakened so significantly. So spending 12 hours in Cuba, 60 miles is the difference. If that storm had been 60 miles more to the north and not impacted Cuba directly, most of this stuff would be gone right now. I mean, that's how close we were. But it did. So yet again, we dodged another bullet. And one more quick thing, I forgot to mention this. I get more questions about rule number 7 than anything that I've ever done. And for those who don't follow, back when the RNC was going to be here was here in 2012, and we had Hurricane Isaac, and people were freaking out because of obviously everything that was going on. I came up with these rule set just off the top of my head, sitting at my desk for like 3 minutes. And I went through the list of the top 4, and then the 5th one was don't freak out. And then I went to rule number 7, don't freak out unless I'm freaking out, we're fine. And as simple as that is, that message resonated. Because somebody has already sold 1,000 t-shirts that say rule number 7 on it. They've sent me one. It was adorable. I mean, all these things. And it was just, again, what it reminded me was people want to be reassured. Because everybody already knows how bad it could be. And so as crazy as it is, whenever you see, if you ever follow on my Facebook page, if you ever see rule number 7, or if you search on it, that's what it is. Don't freak out unless I'm freaking out, and I'm not freaking out yet. So, but when they saw me loading my car up with my pictures, then they were starting to worry about it. Exactly. That's what I was hearing.
Hi, Shannon Love. Question for you. You mentioned that when you saw that the forecast was possibly going to change versus the National Hurricane Center, you had a label in. Do you think that the media hype surrounding the hurricane altered the coverage of accurate hurricane reports at moments because of those issues?
From who? Accurate hurricane reports from
the national media.
I don't think they need any help at all hyping the storm. It really angered me watching what I watched because they were feeding on fear. They were, and I would expect it maybe with some of the national mainstream media. I didn't expect it with the Weather Channel. I really didn't, because I think the Weather Channel knows that so many people turn to them when there's a situation going. There's a great show on the Weather Channel. It's Weather Underground. It's on most evenings, 7 o'clock. They sit around and they talk, kind of like what we're doing now, and they give the different models and they discuss possibilities. It's a great show because it isn't always just about this is going to happen. They throw out possibilities because, again, as we know, the science of meteorology, I mean, it might be a perfect science, but we don't understand it perfectly. So there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be errors. We're going to screw up. So I think that one of the issues is there is so much information out there now, whether all the models are out there, that people at home have a tendency. I mean, how many people on your Facebook feed do you know are expert meteorologists now who have no background at all in meteorology, but they post like they are? And I read them, and, oh, okay, that makes sense. You know, so, I mean, I think there's so much information out there, there's no way to avoid it. From the national perspective, I take that back, there is a way to avoid it. They just choose to do it because they get more viewers that way. It's frustrating. I don't think having the model data out there before anything else has anything to do with it. I think they're doing it to get viewers. And unfortunately, they always get a ton of viewers when it happens. So it works, even though it just ticks me off.
Hal Friedman.
Hi, Hal.
Quick story and then a question. We had tickets to D.C. And to the day that we left, we were wondering whether to leave or not for the Press Street Hotel. And the barista at Starbucks said, you got tickets to a great place, go on a vacation, get this a hurricane. So that would be my advice to people.
if they can get out.
Question I got, someone who moved here from San Francisco and lived there in 89, you were in L.A., what do you prefer, earthquake or hurricane?
I was in L.A. in the Northridge quake. And that was my first earthquake. And I will admit, I wanted to experience an earthquake because I wanted to see what it was like. Because I'm the guy that would get tied to a palm tree if possible. I mean, I've chased hurricanes, and I was in Beaumont, Texas, when Rita hit as a big one. But earthquakes, I don't like earthquakes because you don't know they're coming. You know, with the Northridge quake, the first 10 seconds was really cool, but then the next 35 were really scary because you don't know if it's the big one, and you wonder if everything that you have is about to fall. So hurricanes are so much easier because you can see them coming and you can forecast them, as opposed to earthquakes, which are incredibly frightening. I was actually in Vegas also on the top floor of the MGM when a 7.1 hit in the desert, and I'm in bed and I start to feel, no, actually I'm starting to hear squeaking. No idea what the heck that was. And all of a sudden I felt like it might have been moving a little bit, but not really. So I looked out the window and there was a giant crane with a wrecking ball and it was going like this. And then there was a video out where all the tables, of course, the dealers put their hands on all the chips and everything. But it was 120 miles away, so there was no damage. But answer to your question is earthquakes are another animal entirely. I don't miss them at all.
A box of prayers, which channels, meteorologists did the best job or the worst job in describing the Hurricane Irma? I mean, that includes you.
I mean, do you really think I'm going to say anything other than me? I mean, I will tell you, as I said, I think everybody in this market does a really nice job. And here's the answer to your question. Every station has a different tone, a different feel, a different on-air presentation. So I think everyone got the information across like they were supposed to. I just think it's a different style in which they do so. And it's up to the individual of which they prefer. I mean that in all sincerity. I've worked in markets where I think some of the other guys are hacks, or they worry about scare tactics and whatnot. I don't see that in this market. I think Paul does a great job. I think Steve does a great job. I think Mike Clay at Bay News 9 does. I think Bobby at Channel 10. They all do really nice jobs. It's just a matter of – and let's be honest too. Most people, when you're watching television and you're getting a hurricane forecast, 99% of that's coming from the Hurricane Center. Now, I have a degree in tropical meteorology. So to me, I'd like to think that those 5 years, should have been four, those 5 years probably lend me well in terms of forecasting tropical systems and getting that information across. But I still think ultimately people watch who they like. I mean, I think that's usually the way it works.
Hi, guys. I'm Corey Adler. I'm wondering about your thoughts about FEMA and how they are able to glean all the information from all the reports and prepare. How do you think FEMA did this year?
That's a really, you know, that depends which county you ask too, because Craig Fugate, who used to be Florida's, yeah, Craig's a great guy. And then when he went to FEMA, I think I've spoken to him briefly on it. It's not the same job because you just run into so many political hurdles, whether it's financing, whether, you know, there's just, it isn't a matter. I will tell you this. The people who run FEMA and the people who handle emergency preparedness, they are more than ready and willing and able to go before they need to be there. The problem is the process to get them approved, to get the funds, to get the what they need to get where they in the U.S. Now, Puerto Rico is another story entirely with Maria. I don't have any personal experience on that. My gut is they ran into something that they've never seen before with Maria. So they didn't know what to do. It was too big. But for Irma, for our area, I think if there were any problems, it wasn't because the people weren't able to do their job or willing. I think that it was a matter of just not having the funding that, I mean, the funding has been cut a lot in terms of FEMA, in terms of the NOAA. A lot of those places have lost a lot of money, and I don't work for them, but I have a lot of friends who do, and they've been saying for years, not this administration, lots of administrations have continued to cut NOAA and FEMA funding, and I personally think that's what came into play. It certainly wasn't the people weren't ready. I guarantee you, everybody knew this storm was coming, so it wasn't like it crept up on us. It was a matter of once it happened, going through the pecking order to get the people where they needed to be. The answer to your question is probably not a great job in some areas. We did stories on people in Polk County and Citrus who did not get the help they needed. I think the larger populated areas actually probably got a little bit more.
Jordan Mondo.
Hi, Jordan.
Since you mentioned that you worked and lived in LA, people are comparing the Santa Ana winds to a hurricane almost. Do you think that could potentially be a Florida problem because it's going to be a dry winter?
Not Santa Ana's, but definitely fires. Yeah, Ventura County, that's where I live. The areas that are burning down right now. I've been through that. In fact, I went to bed one night in fire season when I was out there, and I could see a little glow on the other side of the mountain. 6 hours later, I woke up, and the entire mountain range was on fire right in the back of our house. So I've been through the fires. Santa Ana winds are very common. They happen every year. Big high pressure in the Great Basin brings a lot of wind to California and Utah and Nevada. Nothing to do with tropical systems, so it's a completely different animal. But the winds and the dry air, they're not going to get any rain for 2 weeks there, so the fires are going to be worse. I believe we're going to have another bad fire season next spring because we're not going to get a lot of rain this winter. We're going to get a little bit in the next couple of days. I think we're going to have mostly dry winter, so come February and March. And remember, it was 6 months ago, we had a ton of fires. We had a nice summer with all that rain. But remember all the fires that we had in May and June? And I think we're going to have that again. So it's not based on Santa Ana winds. That's a completely different phenomenon. But it's the same end result. The end result is a dry winter, as you're saying. Well, I think will lead to a very active fire season for us again in the spring. Probably every bit as active as last year.
Mark Mara. We're all warned to stay inside and seek safety. The station continually put the borders out in the storm. What is the sense?
Yes. Dick Fletcher, who used to be the chief med before he passed away at Channel 10, him and I got in quite a debate at a hurricane conference about 10, 15 years ago. And ironically enough, I was actually awarded the Dick Fletcher Award this last year from the Governor's Hurricane Conference. I was wondering if he was rolling in his grave as I got awarded that, because we differed greatly on that. Here's the reality. People are going to watch. Even if it doesn't make sense, even if it's dumb, even if people are saying, don't do this at home, and stuff's flying away like that, people watch. And the reality of it is, if they're going to watch, the stations are going to be making money, and they're going to do it. It is. In a perfect world, you're 100% right, but it isn't. And every news director whose job depends on ratings and every general manager whose job depends on ratings knows that if you put a reporter out, and I will tell you this, you never have to ask anybody to do it. They're lining up. Every one of them, as was I. I mean, I'll tell you, when I chased Hurricane Rita, this is a great story. Hurricane Rita in Beaumont, Texas, Cat 5. It hit as a 4. It hit at night. So what was incredibly frightening to me was that all these things were falling and you couldn't see them falling. So that made it even worse. So 2 days of no water, no food, anything. Everybody looked like they had gone through a hurricane. We're at the fairgrounds and they're busing everybody from Beaumont to San Antonio. And I'm with my camera crew and there's hundreds of people that looked so disheveled and beat up. And all of a sudden we walk down in the fairgrounds and these two beautiful blondes walk in dressed to the nines, totally made up, and they walk right up to us. And it's a Sunday afternoon, and we're in Beaumont, Texas. And the woman goes, do you know if the Tampa Bay Bucks won today? And I go, what? And she goes, do you know, they're in Green Bay. Do you know if they won? And I go, yeah, I think they did. She goes, do you know how their kicker did? And I go, no, why? She goes, well, I'm Matt Bryant's wife. And they're from Beaumont, Texas. And they had driven from Tampa to Beaumont to see what the damage. And they still looked, her and her sister still looked amazing after a 12-hour drive. But it was the craziest thing because I didn't have anything that said Tampa on me. And she just walked up to me and said, did the Bucks win? That is the craziest story. So, and for a change, they did.
Ray Arsenault. Just back to your notion about getting a hotel room, we did get a hotel reservation, but we brought on bed bugs after. But I'm curious, you mentioned about the hyping and the distortion from the Weather Channel and CNN. curious if you've had situations where your producer or director wanted to over-dramatize the situation, put pressure on you, maybe to bend things a bit to make it more exciting for viewership, and you had to sort of as a professional?
That's a great question. 1998, I believe it was, Hurricane George was coming this way, and we were under hurricane warnings here. And people were starting to freak out. I was still the morning guy. I wasn't the chief at that point. And I was absolutely confident. I really, really felt strongly about my forecast that it was going to skim by this area and not pose a problem. And I went on TV and said that. And our chief, who was a great guy, usually was very steady, stayed with what the Hurricane Center said all the time. So you've got me saying it's going to miss us, and you've got the other guy saying, watch out, we have a hurricane warning, which is obviously not a good thing because it's a mixed message. But I was so confident in this. I was not going to back down. So my boss calls me in, and he said, why are you saying that this is going to miss us? And I said, because it's going to miss us. And he said, but if you say that, people won't watch anymore. And I just looked at him, and I bit my tongue, which is rare for me. And I just walked away, and I kept saying it. And sure enough, it missed us. And after the fact, he applauded me for sticking to my guns. But the point was, that came from our general manager. Now, that's when that was 20 years ago. So now I've to the point where I guess I've developed enough credibility, whatever, that doesn't happen at our station anymore. And if it does, I nip it in the bud really, really quick, and they stay away from it. So the answer to your question is, yes, I think producers and news directors probably have a propensity to want to hype it, but they know that I'm going to ream them out if they do, so they usually don't. But I think it's the same mindset that I said about sending a guy out in the middle of a storm. They feel as though if they hype it, people are more inclined to watch. You know, and they might be, but for the wrong reason, which is why I really tried to show that I think tone helped we had great ratings during the storm, even proportionally to other stations, because I think people were realizing that we weren't trying to scare people. We were doing our best to get them through it. I don't have the... You can do a couple more.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
As a trained scientist, a professional meteorologist, how do you react when you hear President Trump say that global warming?
I really thought I was going to get through without a global warming question. I was so.
By the Chinese.
Say the last part again.
How do you react when President Trump says that global warming is a hoax cooked up by the Chinese?
Well, that's just an asinine statement. I mean, I did not hear him say that. So, but the Chinese did not hook up global warming or cook up global warming, or whatever he's saying. No, but here's the reality in my, I'm nothing. I have trouble getting 7 days down the road, right? Like I'm saying. So, but I will tell you this, and I believe this strongly. Yes, there are things going on right now in the world in terms of climate that we have never seen before. Some of the last 3 or 4 years, the overwhelming majority of those years have been warmer than normal. But that doesn't necessarily mean that 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 years that trend will continue in that order. It might, but again, any time that you hear a forecast model predicting what it's going to do, I'm telling you, they are the same physics, the same models that we use for the 7-day forecast. All the 7-day forecast is, it takes a moment in time and increments it by 1 second, and then 2 seconds, and then 4 seconds, and it goes exponentially up until it gets to whatever it wants to go to. And there's obviously a huge margin of error by day 7. Well, when you get 7 years and 10 years and 20 years, the accuracy is so, from a scientist perspective, it's not accurate at all. But I understand what people are trying to do, though, and it's such a political issue now that I don't even get involved with that part of it, but you asked as a scientist. As a scientist, what the observations we're seeing now, yes, there is something going on right now. Might it be a short-term thing? Could be. We don't have any definitive data. But anybody who goes on and says, well, we know that in 40 years this is going to happen, and we know, that's just not true. We don't know. we might suspect. Maybe they're trying to get more funding for something. Who knows? But I'm not smart enough to sit here and say I know the answer one way or the other, but I do know that what's happening right now is something we've never seen before. The amount of warmth that's out there right now is unlike anything we've ever seen. Now, does that mean it's going to continue? Who knows? But at this point, that has to be at least kept an eye on, because it is unlike anything we've ever seen in recorded history.
All right, I want to thank for spending his lunch with us today. Before I announce the Fang and Claw winners, I was reminded of a new sponsorship that the board has come up with. I know several Tiger Bay members miss the Yacht Club sticky buns. Might sound like a trivial issue, but it's not. So we've decided to have fun with this next year and going to start offering sticky bun sponsorships. And we're going to come up with some interesting and fun ways to benefit the sponsors next year. So if you have any questions about that, talk to Chandra or myself after the meeting. Today's Fang and Claw winner is Ray Arsenal. And with that, I'd like to adjourn today's lunch. Thank you for coming out.
Tiger Bay Club President Todd Jennings bangs the gavel, and this session of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club is concluded, the annual meeting of the club, and also a presentation, What We Learned This Hurricane Season, with ABC TV Action News meteorologist Dennis Phillips. Program came to you live from the St. Petersburg Yacht Club in downtown St. Petersburg, Florida. Live event coverage on RadioSt.Pete.com. This is Joe Bordeaux. Thanks so much for listening. We return you now to our studio.